Hey everyone, this is Dominique. If you're ready to get better results with your life and with your money, stay tuned. Today we're going to be talking about five elements, must-have elements of your financial plan if you want to stay out of crisis mode. Stay tuned.
Are you tired of feeling like there's more to life that you're just not experiencing? Are you unmotivated by keeping up with the status quo? Are you ready to start living intentionally with your finances and creating the life you want? Get ready for Experiencing Financial Contentment with Dominique Henderson, a podcast focused on helping you create margin for the life you want to live by putting your money where your heart is. Each week, Dominique will help you explore the decisions you make around money so that you can achieve better results. Now, here's your host, Dominique Henderson.
All right, what's up, everybody? We are live on Facebook. I'll be in the chat today helping answer any questions you have, giving you high fives and shout outs. So like and love and give me some wild faces, no peaches. on the live chat today. So I'm your host, Dominique Henderson of Experiencing Financial Contentment, founder of DJH Capital Management, where we're helping clients achieve their ideal financial outcomes. That is the mission. What we do just to get you to help out with things and tidbits and anecdotes and advice to help you do more with your money. So I like to say that financial contentment is about putting your money where your heart is. So if you're interested in making sure that you take this red pill to leave the matrix of the average and you're tired and weary of the rat race, or you're just tired of doing more and having less, this is the podcast for you. So we're going to help you use your money to support a lifestyle of meaning and purpose. So today we're going to dive in five must-have elements to your financial plan. I've covered this in, I would say, you know, bits and pieces over the, you know, probably 100 episodes or so between the Financial Literacy Bootcamp and Maven's Keys. And so this is always an element that I think is needed to be discussed. Financial literacy is one of those things where I believe only 17 states at this point of the 50 have some type of curriculum that you have to go through while you're in grade school, either K through 12. So want to help you out with that. Just a reminder, housekeeping, make sure if you're watching on YouTube, you subscribe to our channel. We'd love for you to like and share the podcast. You know, we're giving you weekly content here to help you get better results with your life and money. So all you got to do if you're on YouTube is hit that red subscribe button and that's how you do it. And I'll have a couple of offers for you if you stay tuned to the end here. So we have been talking about how to live the life you want to live. And that is really the kickoff theme for the rebrand. We rebranded the podcast about 4 weeks ago. And so Experiencing Financial Contentment is about living the life you want to live now. So, you know, we took you through all those steps and I want to transition into a very specific topic around financial planning. I am a financial advisor. I am a certified financial planner. So I feel well-equipped to give you some of those tools, obviously. I think what I see most often as a financial advisor is I see people who come to me when they are on the precipice or like right in crisis mode, unfortunately. Very rarely do people just say, you know what, I'm in a really good space now. Things couldn't be going better. And I want to put a financial plan in place. That's just not how human nature works. I'm not mad at you. Because I do some of the same things. You know, I see the check engine light on my car and I go, oh, I'll get that done later. Or, you know, my 6 months comes up and it's time to go to the dentist. And I go, oh, I'll put that off later. So I get it. I do get it. But today I want to kind of offer you five elements that have to be in, I would say, just about every financial plan. And obviously there can be more, but I'm going to give you the five most crucial things that I see as a financial planner. Been in financial services for nearly two decades now. So I want to give you some things to kind of avoid crisis. And so I think the first thing is, and I hate that I didn't prepare well enough to give you guys like a list, but just kind of go with me. You can always play this back, obviously. So I think the very first thing is just to have a strategy in place. Now, this is not your actual plan per se, but a strategy on how you will manage your life. Because we're financial planning. We call it financial planning. And a lot of it does have to do with your money, but it's really a plan to manage your life. So have a strategy in place to manage your life. And it seems like pretty much a no-brainer, but you know, that antidote of failing to plan is indeed planning to fail. That's true. And so you need to be thinking at least a very high level, at a minimum, of something written down that needs to be reviewed at least twice per year. Now, even before I was writing financial plans for people, me and my wife have been for years engaging in what we call vision planning. And towards the end of the year, beginning of the new year, we take all our family goals, which includes career, whatever we're both doing at that point in time, wherever the stage of our kids are in life, yada, 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 all that kind of stuff. So we weave kind of like our spirituality and our personal goals and our goals together as a unit. And so we do that once a year. I would say at a minimum, you need to have something like that. And that's just a strategy in place for you to move forward and make progress. And so now if you want to get a little bit more granular and you're actually talking about something that encompasses how you're going to spend your income, your financial capital that we talk about on this program, which is, you know, basically your human capital traded for money. In order for you not to be on the short end of the time for money trade, you probably need to sit down with a qualified professional like myself and give you a level of organization on how this strategy is going to kind of unfold, right? So that would be, you know, something very detailed and specific to you and your family's needs. You know, and for example, I mean, like some things that are like kind of, I would say no brainers, but for instance, if you're in a job that moves around every 2 to 3 years. I mean, you could be in the military or you could just have one of those jobs that do that. An important decision that's going to govern how your investments, how much money you have to invest, how your cash flow is going to be spent, even tax ramifications, is whether you should rent or buy, right? Do you go to a new market and do you rent a home? In this market, you know, rent prices in some markets are as high as home buying prices. So does it make sense to just buy or rent? This is a big ticket item that you don't want to mess up because like I also say, you know, the cost of you making a mistake, both time and money, those want to be those things that, you know, one of those things that you may not be able to recoup. So let's just say you're making $100,000 to $150,000 a year. You know, the value of expert advice is the time and money it's going to cost you if you make a bad decision. So that's how you should view that when you're saying, well, should I sit down with a qualified professional? Well, it's kind of like me. Do I hire somebody to cut my yard and do things around my house that I can't really do, but I may be able to find out on YouTube or something like that or Google it? I mean, at the end of the day, if I, you know, turn a screw the wrong way and bust a water pipe and then I got to go hire a plumber and it's happened to be on the weekend and he can't get to me. We're talking about this just, you know, kind of domino effect of me just, you know, at the beginning, just going to hire somebody. So that's kind of the whole deal around having a strategy in place. So hopefully everybody understands that. And like I said, even if you do have a plan, it's good to probably sometimes get a second opinion, like anything that you, you know, have vested interest in, especially your finances. So, all right. So the second must-have element beyond a strategy is let's get a little bit more granular, proper insurance. And I'm not just talking about life insurance. When I talk about insurance, I'm really talking about it from the large scope, which is risk management oversight. Okay. So, I recommend that you have this aspect of your plan reviewed by a professional because, it's just too many things that you can't, or that you can miss and not properly look at unless you have somebody that looks at this on a regular basis. So I talk about this, I think in episode 5, when I talk about the building blocks of financial planning, the episode 5 of Financial Literacy Bootcamp, which I'll put in the show notes. But let me give you an overview of insurance so you can understand why this is so important. So the primary design behind insurance is to protect you from the threat of loss. You want to avoid and or mitigate loss when it happens. So there are probably, I would say, 5 specific areas. So first, it would be loss of income. threat of loss of income. So that's why you get like disability insurance and life insurance. Loss of health. So that's medical and catastrophic. Sometimes people get things like cancer policies and things like that. I don't necessarily advocate that, but you do have to have something in place for threat of loss. Threat of place to stay, where to live. So you need home insurance or renter's insurance. And the things that usually, you know, help your lifestyle, like the things inside your house. So, you know, usually you have a policy that covers things like that. The threat of loss of transportation, like your car. And then I would say the threat of loss of other people, which once you start getting into seven figures and whatnot of net worth, it makes sense to probably have what is called a personal liability umbrella policy, a liability policy so that you can, you know, cover the things that, you know, if somebody gets injured on your property, or maybe if you have a pool and some kids are over and, you know, something happens like that. So if you don't have enough cash in a war chest, so to speak, to offset or mitigate any of these five threats of loss, then it's likely that you need insurance. And even if you do, or you think you do, it's usually so much cheaper just to transfer this risk to an insurance company. When you're talking about literally cents on the dollar in most instances, unless you have some type of like health concern or something like that, usually on average, you can transfer your risk for threat of loss to an insurance company, pay them a premium on a regular basis to protect you and or absorb the loss when and if it happens, if you sustain one. Okay. So that's the whole point behind insurance. So you want to have those aspects covered. You know, for instance, I think one of the probably most overlooked places in people's risk management portfolio is disability. If you were unable to work for an extended period of time and the income that you receive that would be lost for that extended period of time would severely impact your lifestyle, it's likely you need disability. Now, a lot of employers cover this, but most people don't even know what those benefits look like. They don't know when they start. They don't know when they end. They don't know how much of their salary it covers, yada, yada, yada. So really going into that is beyond the scope of this discussion. If you have questions, by all means, give me a call, set an appointment. Let's talk about it. Okay. So number three, and I'm spending a lot more time on these than I want, but hopefully this is helpful. So the third must have element, you need a system to differentiate your current lifestyle support from your future lifestyle support. I just like to call that cash flow management. So you need a system for cash flow management. So real quickly, I've mentioned before, money can be used in five broad ways. Tax payments, that's support for the government in the form of services, protection, education that we receive. You know, most people get free or utilize free public education. So like, for instance, I live in DeSoto and my taxes for my real estate on my house go to property taxes, go to a large portion go to Dallas County and DeSoto for education. So it's not just what you pay to Uncle Sam that's withheld from your check. There's other things, right? And then of course there's like, you know, Medicare and all that kind of stuff, that all the FICA and stuff that gets taken out of your check. So tax payments come out. You really can't do anything about it. It will be here for almost ever as long as you're alive. So that's one way that your money gets used. Debt payments. That's essentially when you've traded you've traded income in the future for consuming goods and services in the present. And so you owe somebody on a payment plan with the interest and stuff like that. So that happens. Specifically, maybe like a house or a car. Education, that's another one. Charitable giving and support. So that's the third way. You can support a cause that relies on philanthropic giving, like a church. The last two, which are kind of, you know, the main reason for your cash flow system, but, you know, all of them integrate together. But current lifestyle support is the level of money it takes to operate your lifestyle needs and wants, and future lifestyle support is the same thing, but it's something in the future period. So inflation is a concern. Obviously the power that you will have, the purchasing power of your money, will you be able to buy a loaf of bread for a buck in, you know, 20, 30 years from now? That's how that all works. So you need a system to allocate across those five ways your money properly. Now, I don't like to use, I know everybody uses the term budget, but I have a system that I use with my client is a bucketing system that takes the stress off of software and spreadsheets and all the like that most people don't keep up with, because like you're at the store and you're trying to figure out how much you spent in your clothing budget. And most likely 9 times out of 10, you're just going to go ahead and purchase that clothing and you're going to go, okay, did I go over budget? And then you're going to look at it maybe next month. And it's going to be a retroactive practice where you probably always feel like you're catching up. Whereas if you just had the bucketing approach that I advocate, you already have a general view of how much money is supposed to be spent in each bucket, and it's already divvied out, and it's a whole lot less stressful. So you need a system like that. You don't have to use my system, but I obviously it's easier for me. I'm actually a finance dude and a nerd and a spreadsheet person, and I got rid of all that stuff because it was just too cumbersome. So there, you do need a system for cash flow management. Number four, you need to have some oh crap money. Like you didn't expect something to happen, but like, oops, this happened. Crisis money, emergency fund money. A lot of people, this is a no-brainer. I think a lot of people know this, but at the end of the day, most people, I can't remember the survey that I read, but most people would have a hard time funding their life within 90 days. So 0 to 90 days is that's the spot in which most people would not be able to fund their life in some form or fashion. Now, granted, I believe that if you got into a crisis, you would probably start to cut things, maybe like cable and, you know, other things like that. But at the end of the day, you know, cable may run you anywhere from $60 to $100 a month. Typically, a crisis moves the needle beyond $100 a month. I mean, we're talking about, you know, four-figure crisis or five-figure crises. And so that means you need to have a couple of paychecks stored up. So I like to say that your emergency fund should be living expenses, not just your earnings in 1 month, because you may spend more than what your earnings are in any given month or less than. So that's always a good gauge to know what is a month worth of living expenses for you. Multiply that by three. That's what should be your oh crap fund. So, you know, I've kind of heard different avocations of this. I won't name any names. My podcast is not big enough for that right now. It probably wouldn't matter, but at the end of the day, I don't want to step on anybody's toes. What I would just say that is 3 months worth of whatever it takes for you to live is kind of good, because if you just think about a two income household, you know, your wife works or both of you guys work. One of you gets injured and can't go to work. You know, a typical disability policy may kick in anywhere from, you know, 4 weeks to 12 weeks. And so what amount of money do you have there? So, you know, I think way back in the day, I've been doing this for a while, you know, the typical disability policy had an elimination period is what they call it of 90 days. So that is where the 3 months came from. But I think 3 months is just probably a good barometer for just about anyone. So that is number four, must have element of your financial plan. And five, last but not least, I have to park a little bit here, but I have an estate plan in place. I can't tell you how many people just what I would say, misconstrue this idea about having an estate. An estate, think about it like this, because it does apply to just about everybody. If you take everything that you own, all the assets you own, subtract that from everything that you owe on it, which is your liabilities or your debts against that, the result is a net worth. Now, you may or may not have a negative net worth. I'm not going to really get into that. Most people are going to at least want the control and or say over what goes where. Some stuff may be protected from creditors, blah, blah, blah. The point is, at some point in your life, you're going to probably have a positive net worth and you'll probably die with a positive net worth. So I'm going to speak to those people. In the case you're dead, it's called your estate. That number of your assets minus your liabilities. While you're living, it's your net worth. When you're dead, it's your estate. And so the whole probate process, which is just a process, probate just means retitling of assets. That's all that means. So if you have not put I'm going to make this real simple. I won't be able to go through everything that I've put in my outline. But if you have put in place a contract on the asset that you have, say, for instance, a life insurance policy is a contract. An annuity is a contract. To some extent, an IRA is a contract, because you're going to go, had that IRA or brokerage account with a custodian, like an investment bank, like a Schwab or Fidelity or E-Trade, and you're going to enter in a contract. That contract will be honored. That law of the land is a little bit higher than some of the other stuff that goes on. And so that contract will be honored first, which means that if you put a beneficiary on that account, that's who will the assets will be retitled to in the event of your death. You don't have to worry about waiting to a will to be interpreted to see where the assets go. Those will be only for the stuff that have no contract in place and that do have to go through the probate process. So this is why you need an estate, because an estate plan, at a minimum, all your accounts, bank accounts, credit card account, not credit card, but credit union accounts, all the IRAs, 401ks, 403bs, 457 plans. I'm going to name all that kind of stuff just in case. So you're like, oh, okay, he's talking about me. All that stuff needs to have a beneficiary. And most likely when you fill it out, when you open those accounts, they make you fill out a beneficiary because those are the accounts that are tied to a contract like I just named. So those pass straight through probate, and you don't have to worry about, you know, a last will and testament dictating how that's going to go. Okay. So let's say you have assets left over after that, like your house. Like, say, for instance, you're single. There is no spouse that's going to inherit it or take on the ownership of it, like a joint rights of survivorship type of deal. Then you need a will to say that these assets go here to this person after I die. So cars, other personal property, houses, things like that, unless you have a person on title with you, which you may or may not want to do. So that's all neither here nor there. So real quick list, and I'll put some of this stuff in the show notes. Last will and testament, medical docs, living will, healthcare directive, medical POA, durable power of attorney, which helps people. You know, some of this stuff is used before death. Some of this stuff is used after death. Obviously, a last will and testament will be used after death. POAs lose their power at your death. So those would be used before death. They're like if you're in an incapacitated type of state, that's what POAs are for. Durable power of attorneys, you can limit those powers, but people can pay your bills and transact real estate for you and blah, 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 all that kind of stuff like that. And then let me just cover real quickly trust. So trust are used for a few different reasons. These are not necessary. These are optional, but you may want to, if you are older and have younger children, and if there's some type of concern that you may not be around and they may get assets that they're not ready to manage, that's what trusts are for. It's also used for credit protection. In some instances, it can be used for tax planning. It just depends on how high figure you are. So, you know, in a trust, you basically, as the grantor, put assets into the trust, and you have rules around how the beneficiaries can use them. That's basically a trust. So, and so those are the five elements. Got to have a strategy in place. You got to have the proper insurance. You got to have a cash flow management system, how you differentiate your current lifestyle support to your future lifestyle support so you can have some money when you're done working. Or some residual income. You got to have the emergency fund, the what I call the old crap money, and then the and an estate plan. So those are five crucial elements. I probably could add some more stuff in there. If you guys want to talk about this more, maybe I'll do a part two because the list can go on. Obviously, as the list gets longer, they don't become crucial elements. But so let me. I got a couple free offers for you. I wanted to if you're still listening. I want to give this stuff to you or at least pass it to you. So five formulas to financial success gives a little bit more granularity to some of the stuff that I talked about today, especially at the emergency fund ratio. And there's some other things to know whether or not you got too much house, what's your propensity to save. Some of this stuff can give you really back of the envelope calculations as to where you're going to be going, like savings rate and, you know, the trajectory of your financial plan. So that's on the website, djhendersonsr.com. Look on the right side at the top, five formulas to create your financial success. That's on the top. You can click on that and you'll get that infographic. The financial contentment letter, this is something I use in my practice. This is just basically, you know, before you start, you know, spending a lot of money drafting or having a will drafted by an attorney or going through all that and sitting down, this is a good place to start. It's a 2-page document. You can probably do it in a couple of weekends, maybe even one over a cup of coffee, sitting at your kitchen table just to organize your life, where the accounts are, what are the passwords on the accounts, all that kind of stuff like that. Who are the people that need to be contacted if you have a financial advisor or a CPA or a lawyer? Those are things that you need to do. And to be quite honest, this will help the process when you actually go to a lawyer and have this, because, you know, usually those guys or gals are paid by the hour. So sorry for my attorney friends. I'm not trying to take business out of your pocket. But anyways, if you have this, when you go to the attorney, it can really help. So and obviously you can also get the ebook. That's at DJHendersonSR.com/ebook. So those are the free offers, and I appreciate you guys so much for listening today and watching. Obviously, if you need more information, feel free to reach out. We're always here to try to help you. 214-699-7599 is the office number. You can always send us an email at info@DJH-capital.com. All right. Talk to you later. Have a great one, guys. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.